Hi there, folks. This is Tony for the A Minute to Midnight show, currently coming to you from Pennsylvania in the USA, where I will be for the next few weeks. Today I have some pretty important information, news information mostly, and a bit of commentary on it, some important developments I think which you all need to hear. Please though remember that A Minute to Midnight is run 100% by donations. If you're able to donate, it's always much appreciated. You can do that at our website, aminutetomidnight.com, and also make sure you're subscribed to us at our website as well. So thanks, folks, for any help. It's much appreciated. So first off, you know, it's been a pretty big week or so with developments that I think are furthering the New World Order globalist agenda, you know, the Great Reset, whatever you want to call it. It's moving us in that direction quite rapidly, and nothing is by accident. It's all, I believe, pretty well coordinated. And first off, you know, there's been some elections in Canada and Australia. Both of those places, it looked like the more liberal, leftist-leaning parties would go down, and that they were not doing well in polls and things leading up to elections. And yet when Trump's been out there talking about making Canada the 51st state and so on, suddenly it all turned around. And you ended up with Albanese in Australia being re-elected. And then you have Mark Carney in Canada becoming elected as the Prime Minister of Canada. That's where I want to start, with who is Mark Carney. And, you know, there's some pretty important stuff here. And Trump congratulated him and so on, and, you know, said he's a great guy, same as he's done with Albanese in Australia. But here's some real interesting facts about Mark Carney. Starting off in New York, December the 8th, 2020, the Council for Inclusive Capitalism with the Vatican, the Council, a historic new partnership, so this is 5 years ago, between some of the world's largest investment and business leaders and the Vatican, launched on December the 8th, 2020. And the council is led by a core group of global leaders known as Guardians for Inclusive Capitalism, who meet annually with the Pope. Lynn Forrester de Rothschild, who was the wife of the late Evelyn de Rothschild, who was a very powerful man, as many of you will know. Anyway, Lynn Forrester de Rothschild, the founder of the council and managing partner of Inclusive Capital Partners, said back in 2020, "This council will follow the warning from Pope Francis to listen to the cry of the earth and the cry of the poor and answer society's demands for a more equitable and sustainable model of growth." So one of that panel of guardians was Mark Carney, the new Prime Minister of Canada. He was at that stage at the COP22 financial advisor to the Prime Minister and United Nations Special Envoy for Climate Action and Finance. Then in 2024, this is still with the Council of for Inclusive Capitalism, alongside the Climate Week of 2024, Lynn Forrester de Rothschild, founder and CEO of the Council for Inclusive Capitalism, sat down with Mark Carney, the UN Special Envoy for Climate Action and Finance and co-chair of the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, and Peter Orszag, CEO of Lazard, to discuss the crucial role of capital markets and policy in rapidly advancing climate solutions. So this is Mark Carney. This is it. He's right into this whole climate change, what I would call hoax. And it's has also been the Bank for International Settlements, the Central Bank of Central Banks, with whom Carney conspired to pursue monetary policies and green banking schemes. So Carney attended 60 or more meetings from 2008 to 2013 with the meetings of the, you know, the top secret bank for international settlements with his international counterparts during his time as the governor for the Bank of Canada. The main purpose of those meetings has always been to build consensus among central banks, aligning central bank monetary policies with those of the private banking cartel, which takes priority over individual member countries' national interests. So this guy is now the Prime Minister of Canada, but he's been part of this group of central bankers who, you know, meet with the Bank for International Settlements, and their goal is to advance the banking system and that whole thing. So having him as a Prime Minister is dodgy. So Carney served also as the Bank of England's governor from July 1st, 2013 until March 15th, 2020. So no other person has ever been the head of two central banks of two separate countries. Only Mark Carney has done that, being, you know, for the Bank of England and the Bank of Canada. In January of 2020, Carney was appointed by Prime Minister Boris Johnson. That's who was, you know, the English Prime Minister at the time, as finance advisor for COP26, 2021 United Climate Change Conference, to help build a sustainable financial system to support the transition to a net zero economy, which is all part of the UN's goals, you know, the 2030 goals and all that. So Mark Carney is additionally the mastermind behind the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, which was launched in April of 2021 in partnership with the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, that's the UNFCCC, to coordinate efforts across all sectors of the financial system to accelerate the transition to a net zero global economy. Mark Carney was also a member of the Bilderberg's Steering Committee until January of this year. Carney started attending meetings as early as 2012, the Bilderberg meetings. And as most of you should know, Bilderberg is another one of those top secret meetings of globalists held annually, just like the Bank for International Settlements. And to add to this, Carney has also been on the foundation board of the World Economic Forum. He's an out-and-out Davos man. Mark Carney's a Catholic too, by the way. And in 2021, his book titled Values for Building a Better World for All, Carney wrote that the inspiration for the book came from Pope Francis himself. And this is the man that Canada elected as the new Prime Minister. So folks, if you're in Canada, you've got a Prime Minister that's all out and out into this whole global climate change nonsense, and also Bank for International Settlements things, which if you know, you've ever seen that Augustin Carstens video, the big guy that looks like he's, you know, 600 pounds, talking about creating the central bank digital currencies. That's what the Bank for International Settlements wants. So Carney's been part of all of that. Okay, so that was him elected. Now, we've of course had another important election, Pope Leo the 14th. Now here's something I just want to read a little bit that was written by Leo Hyman on the newly elected Pope Leo the 14th. Here's all you need to know about the new Pope, Cardinal Robert Prevost, now Pope Leo the 14th, from The Hill. The new Pope is considered an ally of Francis, who made him the cardinal in charge of selecting and managing bishops around the world. Francis named Prevost in 2023 to be the prefect of the dicastery for bishops and president of the Pontifical Commission for Latin America. The role involves recommending candidates for bishops to the Pope and overseeing the commission that studies the Catholic Church in Latin America, according to the Catholic News Service. So, Chicago-born Pope Leo has an impressive CV. He spent years in Peru as a missionary and then as an archbishop. And here's something that was reported in The Telegraph and also found on stuff.co.nz, talking about Pope Leo. He's seen as a reformer in the mould of Pope Francis. The Argentinian pontiff sent him to run the diocese of Chiclayo in Peru in 2014. He held that position until 2023, when Francis brought him to Rome to be the head of the Vatican's Dicastery for Bishops, which selects many of the world's bishops. Although he kept a low profile in Rome, he was part of one of the most significant reforms undertaken. Many of the most significant reforms undertaken by Francis. And Christine Allen, the director of the Catholic Agency for Overseas Development, said Pope Leo XIV, born Robert Francis Prevost, will be a voice of wisdom in a fractured and divided world as he continues the important work of leading the Church in the world and providing spiritual and moral guidance to the global community. Now more than ever, the world needs a strong and steadfast moral voice that can draw attention to the most important issues of our world, the crippling debt crisis which prevents low-income countries from spending on health and education for the people, the climate crisis, and the conflicts blighting our world. This election reflected a global church with cardinals from every corner of the world voting, bringing a broader outlook to addressing today's global issues. Well, hang on a minute. I thought the Catholics claimed that he's the vicar of Christ and the, Jesus representative on earth. So since when did Jesus get involved in all of this nonsense, all this political stuff, and focusing on all of that? It was about bringing salvation, individual salvation. We all need a saviour, but that's not obviously the most important issue, is it, for the Pope? US President Donald Trump has wished this new pope well, calling Leo's election such an honour for our country. After Leo's election, J.D. Vance posted congratulations on X, adding, "I'm sure millions of American Catholics and other Christians will pray for his successful work leading the church. May God bless him." But a look back through his social media timeline shows posts from Pope Leo sharing viewpoints opposed to the Trump administration policy. So that's going to be interesting to see what goes on here. So John Prevost told Fox 32 that there are no words to describe how proud he was of his baby brother. Pope Leo XIV was born Robert Prevost. So John Prevost is his older brother, and John Prevost predicts that his brother will likely be a second Pope Francis. "I think he's a strong inclination to help the poor, the disenfranchised, the people that don't have a voice because he spent so much time in Peru with the people who were impoverished," Prevost said. So I think she sees the need, and I think he will work for that. The church has to be universal and help everyone, but some people need a lot more help, and I don't think he can do anything, but I think immigration is big time on his mind. He thinks the country's headed in the wrong direction there. So in other words, here we go again. He's just another Pope Francis. And today, May the 10th, in the Jerusalem Post, it stated that Pope Leo XIV signaled on Saturday he would continue with the vision and reforms of Pope Francis, telling the world's Catholic cardinals the late pontiff left a precious legacy that they must continue. So it would seem that we can expect the new pope to be another one championing global policies just like Francis before him. Okay, so yeah, I'll move on from that a little bit, but now I'm going to read directly from an article by Leo Homan, and this is very important information, so pay attention as best you can. It relates to a recent executive order written by President Donald Trump. On April 28th, President Trump signed a disturbing executive order, which you can read at White House Government, titled Strengthening and Unleashing Law Enforcement to Pursue Criminals and Protect Innocent Citizens. Leo says, "When I read it, my first thought was, I wonder what John Whitehead thinks of this document. Over the last 45 years, there's been nobody as consistently in the government's face holding it accountable for violating Americans' civil liberties than John Whitehead. He's litigated countless important cases, some of them all the way to the Supreme Court, and he's also a prolific author, having written books such as Battlefield America, The Eric Blair Diaries, and A Government of Wolves." So Leo called him, and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, John Whitehead, granted him a 20-minute interview. And when I, that's Leo speaking, meaning Leo Hyman, asked him to share his initial thoughts as he read Donald Trump's executive order, here's what he said. The first thing that hit me was George Washington's statements, "Do not have a large standing army on American soil." It began with Obama and some other presidents. We began arming of the Department of Homeland Security and all of their agents with all their military equipment, the MRAP armored vehicles, the grenade launchers and various things they have. The final stage would have to be blending the local police into that process and connecting them with the feds, and that's exactly what this order does. If it gets implemented, this executive order is basically martial law to enforce the president's so-called priorities, Whitehead said. The Posse Comitatus Act of 1878 prevents presidents from using the American military for a domestic police force, and Whitehead believes that's exactly where our country's headed with this executive order combined with previous executive orders by past presidents. The groundwork has already been laid and the Hegelian dialectic set. First, we had Joe Biden, who opened up the borders, inviting every type of violent criminal imaginable into the country while collaborating with liberal prosecutors funded by George Soros. Naturally, crime has spiked dramatically, and in and around major US cities over the last 5 years, Americans are begging for relief. So along comes the next president, Trump, and he brings an answer to the problem that is an extreme, that is as extreme as the original opposite action by Biden. Biden basically wanted no police. Trump wants to expand law enforcement and empower police in ways never seen previously in America. His executive order calls for investing in new prisons and minimizing due process rights. Trump said in an interview with Kristen Welker of NBC News this past Sunday that he does not know who in America is eligible for the due process rights written in the 5th and 14th Amendments. In his rhetoric, Trump routinely heroizes and idolizes toughened military police tactics. "We've done so many cases over the years on how to hold the police accountable for their crimes under this executive order. It would be very difficult to hold anyone accountable in a police uniform. So this executive order will allow police to do anything they want to do, basically, if the community allows it to happen. What if you disagree with a police officer who gives you an unreasonable and unconstitutional order? Can you question them? Well, the new executive order indicates you'd better not risk it. Those who do can be slapped with enhanced sentences for committing crimes against law enforcement officers. Such crimes are left undefined. Originally, police were there to protect the people against criminals, but also against invasion from federal authorities. But basically, that's all gone now," Whitehead said. He sees an ongoing blending of federal law enforcement with the state and local police forces, a concept heavily fortified by Trump's April 28th executive order. "It's been moving in that direction, but this finalizes it. I've talked with plenty of police chiefs over the years, and they've been working really closely with the FBI, having them occupy spaces in their offices and stuff. There's this idea that they have to get ready for an immediate crackdown," he said. "Homeland Security is working with the local police and instructing them. Again, it's a form of martial law. The problem," he sees, "however, is how people are indoctrinated by President Trump." He starts off by saying how great and heroic the police are. "I understand that, and I've worked with good cops so much over the years, but there are also some with mental health problems and some are on drugs." He refers to the police as the greatest of heroes. "The actual heroes are the American people who pay the bills and often end up on the wrong side of these kind of operations. The executive order allows for more surveillance. Advanced AI-powered technology will allow cops to predict where the next crime will be committed and by whom. Throw in the Real ID, a biometric national ID card that Trump's administration is pushing every state to comply with, and you have the makings for a future dictatorship already in place. Basically, it will all be algorithms, and they can swoop in, knock on your door, arrest you based on what they think you might do. It's basically martial law implemented from Washington, D.C., and the Trump administration is acting like the police are going to be the saviors. Trump's previously stated that he wants to give immunity to police, and this executive order appears to do exactly that, stating in Section 3 that it will strengthen and expand legal protections for law enforcement officers. Police already enjoy what's called qualified immunity, so exactly what Trump is offering them in expanded protections is unclear. The point is, he's basically saying the police are going to be the gods ruling over us now, and they have an amazing amount of equipment and technology to do it, John Whitehead said. The Democrats and Republicans both are deeply committed to this type of thing, and they're afraid to push back. So that's kind of concerning, like, folks, you know, the people out there just don't have a clue, most people. They think, oh, yes, this is all for our safety. But when you get someone like John Whitehead who knows the ins and outs of this stuff and tells you exactly what it's about, it puts a whole different spin on things. So now I want to briefly cover just a few other important developments. Firstly, from the Telegraph, the secretive government unit planning to dim the sun. Plans to block sunlight to fight global warming have inadvertently shone a light on ARIA, the government, this is the UK's government's opaque research arm. So this is Britain, okay? The Advanced Research and Invention Agency was set up in 2021 and was originally the brainchild of Dominic Cummins, Boris Johnson's former chief aide. Yet few people on the street know what it is and what it does or how much taxpayer funding is flowing into it. This week, we learned it spent £56.8 million on 21 climate cooling projects, which include looking into the logistics of building a sunshade in space and injecting plumes of salt water into the sky to reflect sunlight away from the Earth. We're not trying to dim the sun, representatives from ARIA said rather disingenuously at a press conference, knowing full well that should experiments prove successful, that is their ultimate aim. Professor Mike Holmes, of Cambridge University pointed out that the experiments were setting Britain up on a slippery slope towards mass deployment of technologies that will be impossible to prove are safe, effective and reversible once they are actually in the sky. Now, I don't know what's the bet. Bill Gates has got some funding going on and all this too. So here's another story from slaynews.com. The Canadian government begins testing inhaled COVID mRNA Aerovax. The Canadian government has begun ramping up testing for a chilling new COVID mRNA Aerovax that seeks to overcome vaccine hesitancy by using aerosols to vaccinate the general public, unlike traditional vaccines that are deployed using injections. The new Aerovax is an atomized spray that is inhaled. The new vax is sprayed in aerosol form and breathed in by recipients. The Aerovax was developed by researchers at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, funded McMaster University in Canada. So I won't go too much into that. And, you know, some of this has been going on for a while. But if they, you know, introduce that, I'm sure it wouldn't be for COVID. It'll be for something else, if, you know, next time around. If they have this technology fully ready to go, you know, they could essentially vaccinate entire towns or cities at once from the air, and, you know, you wouldn't have any say in it. Okay, so I'll move on from that, but here is another thing that I think is a bit of a concern, particularly if you're in Europe, but I think this, you know, we're all interconnected, so this will could potentially affect everyone wherever you are, because the internet is so connected globally. So from Modernity News, which this was originally published from Remix News, the European Commission announced on Wednesday that it is referring five member states to the Court of Justice of the European Union for failing to properly implement the Digital Services Act, Brussels' flagship legislation aimed at regulating online platforms. The countries facing legal action are Czechia, Spain, Cyprus, Poland, and Portugal. According to the Commission, these member states either failed to appoint a national digital services coordinator or failed to empower those bodies with the authority required to enforce a DSA. Additionally, none of the five countries has established penalties for violations of the regulation as mandated by Brussels. The Commission first launched infringement proceedings against these five countries in 2024. Letters of formal notice were sent to Czechia, Cyprus, Poland and Portugal in April and in Spain in July. After the member states failed to comply, the Commission escalated the matter to the EU's highest court. If the Court of Justice rules against them, the countries could face financial penalties and be required to act swiftly to meet their legal obligations. So, folks, this is the EU attempting to force countries into complying with their so-called misinformation and disinformation clampdown. In other words, anything that the EU doesn't like, they want to be able to censor and remove. And so, you know, they're strong-arming the countries in the EU to go along with it. So other concerning things going on right now are the war between Pakistan and India, although today they've announced a ceasefire, the potential war with Iran and whether or not there'll be agreement between the US and Israel on this. And that's an interesting one too, because IsraelHayom.com reported in an article titled "Trump Sidelines Netanyahu in Middle East Policy as Relations Deteriorate." Sources report the president is frustrated over the Israeli prime minister's alleged push for Iran military action. Sources close to President Donald Trump, this is from IsraelHayom.com. I'm reading directly just here. Sources close to US President Donald Trump reported that he's disappointed with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Relations between Prime Minister Netanyahu and the US President have reached a low point, with mutual disappointments on both sides. Sources in the President's inner circle report that he's grown increasingly frustrated with the Israeli Prime Minister. And earlier this week, Israel Hayom reported that Netanyahu was frustrated with Trump. So now it appears the American president has lost patience with his Israeli counterpart. Two senior figures in the Trump circle stated in recent closed-door conversations whose content reached Israel Hayom that Trump has decided to stop waiting for Israel and instead move forward with Middle East initiatives without Netanyahu. And we know Trump's talked a lot about a lot of things in the Middle East, so it will be interesting to see what goes on in that front. And I think the Middle East, of course, is the center for end time events in the future, so all of this could be setting the stage for something big. We'll just have to wait and see how it plays out. So my last thing I want to go on today with is financial thing, and the first bit of it comes from Michael Snyder at the Economic Collapse blog. And Michael writes, "Financial stress is at an all-time high for 70% of Americans. According to a new survey that was just released, financial stress is at an all-time high for 70% of Americans. Americans are drowning in money worries, and it's taking a serious toll on their mental health. A new survey reveals that 70% of Americans say their financial stress has hit an all-time high, with more than three-quarters feeling totally alone in their struggle to manage money pressures. Even worse, this financial strain is affecting people's overall well-being, with 20% reporting worse mental health over the past year. The findings come from a nationwide poll of 2,000 people conducted by Talker Research for Doctor on Demand by Included Health, offering a troubling glimpse into how economic pressures are reshaping Americans' relationship with both mental and physical health." So, and I'm sure that's not just America, you know, that was America in that poll, but folks, it's pretty much global, this financial stress. And when it comes to financial stress, the very last thing I have here, by the way, is that in Spain, I believe new draconian measures to control people and their finances have just come into effect or are coming into effect. There was a notice of cash withdrawal. If you wish to withdraw more than 3,000 euros in cash, you must notify the tax agency at least 24 hours in advance of the withdrawal. You must also specify the purpose of the withdrawal. Failure to comply with this requirement may result in fines up to 150,000 euros. So, hang on a minute. Isn't it your own money? You put it into the bank? Shouldn't you be able to do with it what you want? Obviously not, because no, you put the money into the bank and it's actually the bank's money. And you're basically controlled. The government wants to know everything about it, monitor everything about it, everything you do, everything you spend it on. That's Spain. But similar types of things, this is what people like the Bank for International Settlements and all of those want globally. So, folks, you know, all of these things are kind of concerning. We still need to keep our eyes on the Lord and realize that, you know, we're not ultimately citizens of this world. If you're a Christian, your citizenship is in heaven. And that's where our main focus needs to be. Not on being political activists or believing that someone's a political savior or whatever, but it's still wise to understand what's going on and probably make preparations accordingly as best as you can. So that's all I wanted to cover today, folks. Don't forget, as I said earlier, subscribe to us at aminutetomidnight.com. Donate if you're able, and hopefully I'll be back in a few days with another video. I have much less equipment with me in America than I normally have at home in New Zealand, so it's a little more difficult for me to do it, but I'm going to do the best I can. So that's it for this episode of the A Minute to Midnight Show. God bless, and God willing, we'll be back again soon.